I must confess, I came today in a rebellious mood. I got a raw deal at the airline's office. When faced with such situations, everything seems doubtful. Everything seems useless.
This is a very useful mood. Doubting all, refusing all, unwilling to learn through another. It is the fruit of your long sadhana. After all, one does not study forever.
Enough of it. It took me nowhere.
Don't say nowhere. It took you where you are now.
It is again the child and its tantrums. I have not moved an inch from where I was.
You began as a child, and you will end as a child. Whatever you have acquired in the meantime, you must lose and start at the beginning.
But the child kicks. When it is unhappy or denied anything, it kicks.
Let it kick. Just look at the kicking. And if you are too afraid of the society to kick convincingly, look at that too. I know it is a painful business, but there is no remedy except one. The search for remedies must cease. If you are angry or in pain, separate yourself from anger and pain and watch them. Externalization is the first step to liberation. Step away and look. The physical events will go on happening, but by themselves, they have no importance. It is the mind alone that matters. Whatever happens, you cannot kick and scream in an airline office or in a bank. Society does not allow it. If you do not like their ways or are not prepared to endure them, don't fly, don't carry money. Walk, and if you cannot walk, don't travel. If you deal with society, you must accept its ways, for its ways are your ways. Your needs and demands have created them. Your desires are so complex and contradictory. No wonder the society you create is also complex and contradictory.
I do see and admit that the outer chaos is merely a reflection of my own inner disharmony. But what is the remedy?
Don't seek remedies.
Sometimes one is in a state of grace and life is happy and harmonious. But such a state does not last. The mood changes and all goes wrong.
If we could only keep quiet, clear of memories and expectations, we would be able to discern the beautiful pattern of events. It is our restlessness that causes chaos.
For full 3 hours that I spent in the airline office, I was practicing patience and forbearance. It did not speed up matters.
At least it did not slow them down, as your kicking would surely have done. You want immediate results. We do not dispense magic here. Everybody does the same mistake, refusing the means, but wanting the ends. You want peace and harmony in the world, but refuse to have them in yourself. Follow my advice implicitly, and you will not be disappointed. I cannot solve your problem by mere words. You have to act on what I tell you, and persevere. It is not the right advice that liberates, but the action based on it. Just like a doctor, after giving the patient an injection, tells him, "Now, keep quiet, do nothing more, just keep quiet." I am telling you, you have got your injection. Now, keep quiet, just keep quiet. You have nothing else to do. My guru did the same. He would tell me something, then he said, "Now, you, keep quiet. Don't go on ruminating all the time. Stop. Be silent."
I can keep quiet for an hour in the morning, but the day is long, and many things happen that throw me out of balance. It is easy to say, "Be silent." But to be silent when all is screaming in me and around me, please tell me how it is done.
All that needs doing can be done in peace and silence. There is no need to get upset.
It is all theory, which does not fit the facts. I am returning to Europe with nothing to do there. My life is completely empty.
If you just try to keep quiet, all will come. The work, the strength for the work, the right motive. Must you know everything beforehand? Don't be anxious about your future. Be quiet now, and all will fall in place. The unexpected is bound to happen, while the anticipated may never come. Don't tell me you cannot control your nature. You need not control it. Throw it overboard. Have no nature to fight or to submit to. No experience will hurt you, provided you don't make it into a habit. Of the entire universe, you are the subtle cause. All is because you are. Grasp this point firmly and deeply, and dwell on it repeatedly. To realize this as absolutely true is liberation.
If I am the seed of my universe, then a rotten seed I am. By the fruit, the seed is known.
What is wrong with this world, with your world, this world, that you swear at it?
It is full of pain.
Yes, but nature is neither pleasant nor painful. It is all... what is it? Intelligence, beauty. Pain and pleasure are in the mind. Change the scale of values, change your scale of values, and all will change. Pleasure and pain are disturbances, mere disturbances of the senses. Treat them equally, and there will only be bliss. And the world is what you make it. It's a cliche, but it's true. By all means, then, make it happy. Only contentment can make you happy. Desires fulfilled breed more desires. Don't get into that. Keeping away from all desires and contentment in what comes by itself is a very fruitful state, a precondition to the state of fullness. Don't distrust its apparent sterility and emptiness. Believe me, it is the satisfaction of desires that breeds misery. Freedom from desires, that's the true bliss.
There are things we need.
What you need will come to you if you do not ask for what you do not need. Yet only few people reach the state of complete dispassion and detachment. It is a very high state, the very threshold of liberation.
I have been barren for the last 2 years, desolate and empty, and often was I praying for death to come.
Well, with your coming here, events, I guess, have started rolling, right? Let things happen as they happen. They will sort themselves out very, very nicely in the end. You need not strain towards the future. The future will come to you on its own. For some time longer, I think you will remain sleepwalking, as you do now, bereft of meaning and assurance. But this period will end, and you will find your work both fruitful, easy. There are always moments when one feels empty and estranged. Such moments are most desirable, for it means the soul has cast its moorings and is sailing for distant places. This is detachment. The soul casting its moorings and sailing for distant places. This is detachment. When the old is over and the new has not yet come. If you are afraid, the state may be distressing, but there is really nothing to be afraid of. Remember the instructions. Whatever you come across, go beyond.
The Buddha's rule, to remember what needs to be remembered. But I find it so difficult to remember the right thing at the right moment. With me, forgetting seems to be the rule.
It is not easy to remember when every situation, every situation can bring up a storm of desires and fears. Every situation, storm, desires, fears, craving, born of memory, is also the destroyer of memory.
How am I to fight desire? There is nothing stronger.
the waters of life are thundering over the rocks of objects. Desirable, hateful. So maybe we need to remove the rocks by insight and detachment. And then the same waters will flow deep and silent and swift in greater volume and with greater power. Don't be too theoretical about it. You know, just give time to thought, consideration. If you desire to be free, neglect not the nearest step to freedom. It's like climbing a mountain. Not a step can be missed. One step less, and the summit is not reached. Whoa!
Yes,
I feel like there's a lot of wisdom in this piece, isn't there? It's almost like every line, at times, I think could potentially give food for a lot of thought and discussion.
Yes, absolutely. That's exactly how I was feeling. Whoa.
Yeah. Is there something, I mean, there's so much here, but is there something that really, I don't know, spoke to you?
Yeah, there's a lot, yes, and there was this sentence which says, nature is neither pleasant nor painful. It is all intelligence and beauty. Pain and pleasure are in the mind. And he also takes it further, one step further, and gives a how to grasp that by saying that change your scale of values and all will change.
What do you think he means there by the scale of values?
I think it's like what you give importance to or not, like going back to the desires and the aversion.
Yeah, I think it's sometimes hard to grasp this kind of concept that pain and pleasure are in the mind. But, you know, serendipitously, I've been today, on the last couple of days, doing this little podcast for this other podcast thing I do called The Tarot Cure. And the episode I've been working on is about how 400 million years ago, there was this incredible revolution in our neural structures as life forms, and you had the first roundworms came on the scene, essentially. And these worms, for the first time, and the only reason I know this because I've read a book about it recently, for the first time, had essentially a kind of thinker neuron, because everything before that had been sensor and doer. That's basically the two neurons that had been available, right? And it had all been reflexive. It had all been like sensor, you know, gets the data, doer then does something in a very kind of push-pull thing. But suddenly you get this thinker neuron, and the thinker neuron is really where the human mind as we know it begins, because it's this neuron that sits between the sensor and the doer, and kind of apportions certain values to certain things, right? And does, it's not making decisions yet, it's not a decider neuron, but it has a kind of deciding circuit built into it. But the thing that's really startling about it, well, I found startling when it was, when I read about this, was that it's not actually connected to anything that's real, because the sensor is getting real sensory input from the environment and the doer is doing something real in the environment, but the thinker neuron is just simply existing in this kind of abstract space, I guess we would now call the mind, right? And it's not really doing anything. And so, but it's the one who's kind of assigning whether this is painful or pleasurable. It really is. Even though it doesn't really know pain. It doesn't really know pleasure. I don't know if that doesn't sound too kind of weird, but that's what it made me think of, that sort of thinker neuron. Right, who thinks it knows what pain and pleasure is because it assigns the values, but it doesn't actually, it doesn't have any contact with reality.
Yes. Yes, that is so true. Yes. The mind really, well, this might be too controversial a statement, but the mind probably doesn't have a direct experience of nature.
But that then makes me also think, I guess, of this really a phrase in here from Maharaj that I really found was really startling, you know, when I read it, which is, it is not the right advice that liberates, but the action based on it. And I think it's also that I found it so startling because, you know, you and I are kind of in the business in some way of advising people or helping people sort of move through their lives in a way, taking actions that feels aligned to their values and to who they want to be and how they want to manifest, right? But I don't know how you feel about this, but to me this sort of also gets to the heart of where therapy and coaching can sometimes really struggle, right? That it can be quite abstract. And lots of good advice, lots of wisdom, lots of kind of, you know, insightful chats like the one we're having right now. But it doesn't actually necessarily lead to change because that actually requires the advice taker or the wisdom insight haver to actually go and do something.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, I'm so glad you brought this because in coaching, you know, if you don't get to action, then it was not completely complete.
Yeah, which thankfully in therapy, that's at least not an issue, which is okay.
Yes.
I mean, it should be an issue. Maybe we should have that stricture in place, but it's not.
Yeah. So towards the end of any coaching conversation, my job as a coach is to ask, is there an action coming out of what we have talked about today? And if there is, yeah, are you going to do it? And sometimes, you know, folks may say that there is no action, but then that is an action in itself, that they have realized that they don't need to change anything. So that,
yeah,
that sort of leans into, yeah, that, a little bit into that acceptance space that we were talking about before we started reading.
Yeah. That's right. And he's, I think also, although it can sound a bit glib in this constant repetition of like, almost kind of like, hey, don't worry, be happy, kind of like, almost like, you know, maybe it's also the way I was reading it. It might have sounded a little bit kind of like, you know, I don't know, whatever, stoner Bob or something. But in fact, what he's really saying is he's really sort of saying a little bit, don't you think, when he's saying that, like, hey, maybe stay in the present and see if you can actually just accept what's really happening in the present.
Yeah.
right? But he's not really saying that. He's saying it in, but he's sort of, that to me feels like the essence of what he's saying, perhaps.
Yes, absolutely. There's another place where he talks about that, right? Like, let things happen as they happen.
Yeah. But then, of course, as a client, right, if this wasn't a sort of a guru who was speaking to them, but a client would maybe say back to us, right, well, hang on a second. Aren't I sort of paying you some money in order to make me more, you know, able to put stuff into action, and you're just telling me to let things happen? Hello?
Yes. So
surely I don't need to pay anyone to tell me that.
So true. But I think that's where it comes to the two different, the duality and the non-duality, right? When the Maharaj is inviting action, he's saying that act on what you have decided to act on, which is if you decide to act on your guru's advice, act on that and let the other things happen as they happen. Yeah. So he's proposing action and inaction at the same time.
Sure, yeah. Rather than getting kind of caught up in that either or, like, well, either I'm doing this or I'm doing that, or yeah, either I'm having a great life or I'm having an absolutely awful life. On that somewhat binary note,
yes.
I need to kind of dash, but shall we stop the recording? But
yes.
I really have to say before we do stop the recording that because I realized that we only had like 10 minutes to talk about this, I sort of thought, there's no way we're going to be able to say anything of relevance in 10 minutes. But it does show you that sometimes, I don't know, content can actually fit the space given to it. I don't know if
yes.
that makes sense, right?
Yes, absolutely. Time is just a concept.
Yeah.
Time cannot
if you have
limit
10
us.
Minutes in, that's right. If you have 10 minutes, but you kind of go, well, let's say something, let's try and say something in the 10 minutes. You might say lots of juicy things came out of our brief discussion there. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.